Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host, producer, and sports writer for the LSJ. I'm sorry to inform everyone that we did not go 4 months between podcasts this time. In fact, it had only been 5 days since the last one, but we did hit a record number of downloads for the past 2 years, so I want to give a sincere thank you to all the listeners, both old and new. To my virtual left, a man who yearns for his MSU days when he'd wait in a line 75 people deep to get into Harper's, is Detroit Free Press beat writer Chris Lowry. Chris, how you doing tonight or today?
I did not do that. firstly, because it was only Harper's for the back half of my college experience. And secondly, because
they won't let him in.
Quite well, yeah, that's quite frankly it. Although there used to be the Harper's downtown, which was the dance club underneath, which prior to that was Sensations at Dooley's, but neither here nor there because those things are long, long gone, and I am much, much older, and none of those things ever happened.
Yeah, I was driving around on campus a little bit this weekend, and I got to be honest, I just completely forgot how busy campus is when it's a full load of students. This past weekend was just completely insane. I mean, you had the parents there as well, which made it, you know, even more packed. But yeah, it was quite the weekend in East Lansing.
On the way over to Mel Tucker's press conference, I nearly ran over 34 students because I'm not used to looking out for students.
And right.
Yeah.
They need to understand that.
And they also need to understand to follow the walk signs instead of just walking around whenever they want, even though I know that is a futile thing to be mad at on my part because just students, pedestrians walking just rule everything else. So
let's yell at
angry man shouts at cloud.
Old man yells at cloud. All right, to the right of my screen, MSU's next athletic director who will demand all Big Ten basketball teams play 10 true road games in the non-conference schedule. It's Lansing State Journal columnist Graham Couch. Graham, how's it going over there?
It would be a disaster if I was in charge of college sports. The things I would demand would be so petty and weird that some of them would be good, but it would otherwise be a disaster. Things are good. Things are good. Happy there's going to be a game. The funniest moment today at Mel Tucker's press conference was they had Tucker, and then they had two sets of two players come up at the podium stage thingamajig. And when the two offensive players, Jalen Naylor, came up there with Kenneth Walker, and they asked questions, like, nobody had one. And for a minute, and it was like, the storyline hasn't changed in 7 months. You've been talking to these guys for a month, and it was just one of those moments where I thought, this is as symbolic as anything, that they need a football game for the storyline to slightly shift just a little bit, because there's not a whole lot else to hit.
Well, and it's interesting because it's like, that to me was like, well, we're back to kind of normal, because once you get through camp in most years, first of all, it's not in a press conference setting like that typically. But secondly, you always have, we've talked to these guys for a month, and you know, how much has really changed in the 4 days or eight, 6 days since we last talked to them. So you kind of got to that point where it was like, well, yeah, we've asked you a lot of the same questions that we've been asking since spring practice, since the start of fall camp, since throughout preseason camp. And I can't ask you the same things 5,000 different times, 4,000 different ways. So that's kind of, it kind of felt good in some ways to me to kind of get to that point.
Yeah, no, the thing is, I can't tell if I'm excited about game week because I just love college football and I'm always excited when college football gets here. Or if I started to think today, maybe I just get excited about game week because I'm so sick of the August part by the time it gets here that you've been beaten down into being excited about game week. I'm hoping it's the former.
Well, if the past weekend's traffic is any indication, it should be a pretty busy Friday night, even though I know this is an away game, but I expect kind of campus to be bumping here in preparations for Friday night's game versus Northwestern. Well, in the past 5 days since we recorded, we've had some news breakout, and we won't spend all that much time talking about it, but I do kind of want to start with the athletic director search, where Chris, you and David Jesse from The Freep reported yesterday, I believe, that Alan Howler, yesterday being Monday, that Alan Howler was going to be Michigan State's new athletic director.
Yeah, and just as you were saying that, if you heard my email ding, it was an email from MSU updating us that 1 p.m. or noon on Wednesday, September 1st, Will be a special board of trustees meeting, and presumably it's going to be to announce Alan Haller as athletic director, as there's only one personnel action item on the menu, on the schedule. Almost called it the menu.
Janitorial move, you know.
Yeah.
New head janitor in the admin building.
But we will also hear from MSU President Samuel Stanley and trustees chair Diane Byram after that. So I'm very interested to see how that goes, and I'm sure that we're going to learn that Alan Haller got this. So, you know, and it was a wild process without question. And it's, you know, it started with Bill Beekman, you know, the day that spring practice started, announcing his resignation, and then dead silence for almost 2 weeks from the university, from anywhere. And then there was some concern that either things were going too slow, too fast, or they weren't getting the right candidates, because that's where the concept was floated from some of the board members to Tom Izzo, according to our sources, to take over in an interim capacity so they could find someone if that was the case. And throughout a lot of permutations, heard some names mentioned as being potential candidates, but when the dust settled, the three candidates were Alan Haller, Auburn AD Alan Green, and UCLA AD Martin Jarman, who was the only one of those who did not interview, because as I'd heard from a source, had requested basically a contract offer sheet to interview, and you know, there, I believe he had somewhere around a $1.4 or $1.5 million buyout, and MSU would have had to pay the taxes on that. And I'm not necessarily sure. 3 years ago, you might have been able to get Martin Jarman from Boston College, but one, he's at UCLA now. It would be a lateral move. Two, from all my sources, throughout college sports, not just MSU Germain, they've all said that Jarman is trying to angle for the Ohio State job whenever Gene Smith retires. And three, from a perception standpoint, you can't go paying an athletic director $1.5 million plus a buyout after you just cut the swimming program because you were cash strapped. That would have been a terrible thing. So, and from what I heard, Alan Haller absolutely won and dominated the interviews over the weekend and really swung a couple votes his way.
And that's really what, you know, I think Heather Like was also somebody they looked at. She declined, saying the timing wasn't right. But so she wasn't really in the mix, but she took herself out of that mix.
I had heard that she was spoken to, but was not on the final list of candidates. The three final candidates were the three that I had mentioned there. That and there was a point when Heather Like, I had heard, was a front runner.
Yeah, no, so would I. I had heard that they had she had rebuffed them as much as the other way around. But I do think I don't know that she would have been a better fit than Alan Haller. And what I'm glad for Haller is, and I don't know if he'll be a great AD, but I think he deserved the interview. And that's something I kind of written before after Chris's initial story. Because, you know, he's somebody who's been in that department a long time. He's been a part of two coaching searches. He was instrumental. I mean, the Mel Tucker hire will be his the same way, I believe it should be his the same way that Mark D'Antonio was Hollis's, even though Ron Mason was still the AD. And
he was on that committee as well.
And he was on that committee too. And he knew with Mark D'Antonio, some of the interesting stuff, you know, I've heard about that. I mean, he some of his conversations in 2006 about Mark D'Antonio and understanding why D'Antonio fit then. It makes me believe he understands the university and understand some of the other things that need to be done that are already in the works. And so he deserved an interview, and the fact that he, you know, crushed it in the process doesn't surprise me. To me, what would have been unfair is if they made a move without giving him his day, his chance to sell himself. And they did that. And apparently he did it well, and he's going to get the job. And if he had gone in there and he had been outperformed in that process, and then that would have been fine too, because that's, you know, that's fair. But to me, they did the search. Now the timing wasn't ideal, and that was set up by the time he left. So it was probably a different search than it would have been if it was in May or early June, in terms of, reaching out to, you know, different ADs and their interest level. There might be more people who would have popped up had it been a couple months earlier, but they did the search. So that gives Haller credibility too, which I think is really important. You don't just come back to the guy. And I do think Stanley changed his approach at some point too, and included more people in this process, which made people feel better. And so you reach to a point of harmony, and what this school needs in that department and really throughout the administration that it hasn't had in years now that it had for a brief time is harmony and people moving in the same direction.
Yeah. And Alan Haller being a human resources guy, you know, versus maybe some of the other things, that's something that it's in his background and in his nature. And I think, you know, just kind of look at it. And I think things that kind of haven't really been talked about when you look at the athletic director situation, I mean, two of the people that were rumored as potential candidates with Heather Like and Dave Hickey both had experience at directional schools in Michigan, which, you know, in some ways would be good to know and understand Michigan State, but in some ways might not be good simply with how they left those. Because remember, both Central and West and Eastern, where Heather Like was, and Central, where Dave Hickey was, cut sports. So after they left, so when you have that and you've already got a financial component on this, on the Michigan State side, that's of concern, you know, I would imagine that's a troublesome thing to kind of see. Well, why did you have to cut sports? Why did, when you left your schools, like in the next year or two afterward, did they have to cut sports? I mean, you're already cash strapped and you've already cut a sport. From a perception standpoint, I don't know how that would have played.
So the other thing that's sort of interesting about that, I mean, I do agree to some, but it is sort of a perception from, I mean, Eastern Michigan is going to struggle financially regardless. There are some other issues there that might be Central Michigan too. I mean, Western and Central are just in huge financial trouble right now. And that has not a lot to do with how they've been run and just the realities of situations. And these are very different. So there is also an argument that if you've run a school with that sort of budget and had to deal with that sort of world, that this would be, you'd be even more prepared for this. The one thing that's interesting about Martin Jamond, and I think the Ohio State thing makes sense that you've heard, because UCLA, it may be big in brand, but I've been to Miami, Ohio football games on Tuesday nights with more fans than UCLA had. You've got a basketball program that's a blue blood that can't sell out if Kentucky shows up. Like, UCLA athletics is like the 15th thing in LA. Like, you know, I mean, like, I'm not saying I wouldn't want to live in Southern California. I'm not saying you're not paid well. I'm not saying it's not a good job. But if you truly love the campus environment, I think Michigan State would be a, and big time college athletics would be more of a, would have more of that feel. Now, can I camp out in Southern California for 5 years and then take over at Ohio State? Happily, for a lot of money. So I'm not saying it would have made sense for him.
I don't know. It's a little cheaper to camp out in Columbus than it is to camp out in Westwood.
It's true. But the other thing is, even though I think, and I mean, there's a lot of high regard for him out in UCLA, and I think Haller had high regard for him too, is maybe the only guy that he might have been able to even fit working under, you know, had he gotten the job. I think saying you're not going to interview discludes you. To me, the interview wins the job. You're not interviewed, and that would be a problem for me. If I was Ohio State's AD and that got back to me, what sort of arrogant snob do you think you are? Who are you not to have to interview? You got to interview. I don't care who you are.
I think there's a difference that's the argument of, are you a candidate for it or are you a finalist? And he was on the final candidate list, but that actively withdraws you. If you already know that the school's not going to be able to meet your financial demands, you say you meet my financial demands, otherwise what do we have here? I think that ultimately is where it comes down to with that. And I think that's another thing too with Heather Like, and some of my sources that had told me, again, outside of the Michigan State world, that she's got her eyes on the Ohio State job as well, as someone who also worked under Gene Smith during that time frame, a Michigan alum. So there were a couple things that are there at play. And, you know, one of my sources out west, so he has no ties to Michigan State. When this first went down, we started talking about candidates, and, you know, he didn't mention Heather Like's name. And I said, what about Heather Like? And he said, what's she done at Pitt? And there's, you know, you're hamstrung at Pitt. And, you know, that's the sometimes the fifth sport in Pittsburgh behind the Pirates, Steelers, the Penguins, and then also Duquesne. Penn State.
And Duquesne basketball, damn it.
Duquesne basketball, Robert Morris, and sometimes Carlo College. But, you know, that's – and high school sports actually are probably sometimes ahead of Pitt, you know, unless they have local kids. But, you know, I mean, they haven't made the basketball tournament since she's been AD, and they were a perennial first one and done. I mean, they've had some issues with the Kevin Stallings hire there as well. But here's the thing. We're talking about all these things with the other candidates. The one thing that Alan Haller doesn't have is any of that. He was a finalist for the CMU job last year, which I can't remember who it went to. I know it went to a woman. But he didn't get – he was in the final three candidates there. So, one, if you're Michigan State, you already know he's looking to make that move up. And two, from a timing standpoint, it was probably now or never if you were going to go with him. It's the same thing. If it's 3 years ago, maybe you get Martin Jarman from Boston College, but I don't think necessarily now you would have. That was not a legitimate candidate. But the Alan Green name at Auburn, I thought was, when it came up a couple weeks ago, I thought it was fairly interesting that a Power Five athletic director is looking to move. But then I got into it a little bit, and there was some issues that people at Auburn had with how he brought in Brian Harsin as head coach at football. So,
and people are always going to have issues wherever you are. And one of the things, I mean, and I think that's, you know, nobody's record is going to be, not everybody's going to get to, you know, get along with everybody. Nobody's going to have a perfect record everywhere. Sports are going to fail at some schools, and it's not going to be always the AD's fault. For example, you know, you go to Nebraska right now, and what's going on with Scott Frost, that was still the right hire at the time. Like, that was a guy who was 13-0 at UCF, who was an alum. You know, that's not the wrong hire as a football coach. It's not working out, and now you need the accountability side of that, and you need to probably make a move if things don't change quickly. But what I mean is you can make the right move or the move that makes sense at the time, and it doesn't always play out as you hope.
I should note quickly before we move on that Haller is a Lansing native and, like Graham, a Sexton High School graduate. Congrats to the Big Reds there.
Absolutely. No, a guy who's, you know, homegrown, and there's going to be a loyalty to the university. If you want a destination gig guy, this is a destination gig. And if it works out, you've probably got an AD for a decade. Now, that's up to Alan Haller to run a department well and have things go well and to be a guy who can be there for a decade, which the school could use. I mean, I think people who care about Michigan State should be rooting for that to happen. There will be a number of interesting things that happen in this period of time. I mean, right now, one of the good things about the timing of the job and is that Mel Tucker's in year two of a contract, right? And there's, outside of some unforeseen scandal, there's nothing wins and losses wise that's going to force sort of accountability from an athletic director in the near term there. Tom Izzo is Tom Izzo, and, you know, he's proven over time. But at some point, again, you're going to have conversations. And ideally, if the Alan Haller tenure is working out, you're going to have conversations that deal with the future of Mel Tucker, whether that's extending him and trying to keep him if things have gone well, or what you have to do there otherwise. And the next replacement for Tom Izzo, and that's, it will be interesting, because Izzo, I'm sure, will want his hand in that. And as an AD, you may feel comfortable to a certain degree with that. But so it's going to take somebody who's good at this, frankly. And there are a lot of other things on campus that need to be addressed. And then you've got to deal with the bigger picture in sports, with, you know, everything going on in college sports. It's a critical hire, critical time.
He's been involved with the name, image, and likeness stuff that Michigan State's been ahead of, but also the facilities. I mean, that's, you know, he and Mark D'Antonio a couple years ago went down to Clemson to look at their facilities. Remember the grassroots examination? Well, we've saw in December what that vision is and what the blueprints are. And guess who was it in charge of that in presenting it? Alan Haller. I mean, that's, so he's working not only on the facilities, but with donors to get those things going. And then I think that long-term question is, could you have afforded to have a break in that? So from a timing standpoint, that also was as critical as when in the school year it was.
Yeah. And he also has some, I think, good philosophies on non-revs and student athletes, the importance of them and things he'd like to do to change you know, how sort of the dignity of some of those, you know, the student, how the student athlete themselves is no less important in other sports. And so I think he sees the big picture, you know, executing it will be, I mean, these are hard, big jobs, and they're easy to do when everything's rolling. I mean, they're not easy. I wouldn't say they're easy, but there are degrees in which they're difficult. And you know, one of the things that I think is most important is being comfortable with hiring somebody who you feel has it in them to deal with and take advantage of opportunities, challenges that you can't even picture right now. This is also a job where picking the person is really important, because stuff happens, and so we'll see. Anyway, I think it's you know, I think if they let the interview do the work, I'm always in favor of that. You let the interview do the work, and everything that Chris and I have heard is he killed it in the interview, right? So yep. If that's what happened, then that's good work by them.
All right, well, let's move on to the field activities with Michigan State. First game against Northwestern on Friday, which is 3 days from now. Feels crazy. I'm pretty sure we're all not all that thrilled about the 9:15 p.m. kickoff start for that, but I'm sure the kids in Chicago or Evanston will like it quite a bit. But let's start with the quarterback situation. You know, there wasn't a starting quarterback named when we recorded 5 days ago, and it is still the same today. Chris, when you did your depth chart story that went up over the weekend, you had Anthony Russo listed as the starter. At this point, do you still feel the same about that now, or are you wavering a little bit on that?
I do not. I do not feel the same about that, and I'm in some ways surprised. There was logic that went into that. Obviously, you bring in a grad transfer as a quarterback, and you know, you would imagine that, yeah, if it's close or if it's a tight race, that you would go with the graduate transfer that you brought in who has starting experience. But I've been hearing whispers from sources, not message boards, although I've heard it leaked out a little bit, but I had heard from a source that close to but not close enough to the situation that it very well could be Russo, or excuse me, that could be Thorne. Which to me is fascinating, because one is saying even with the transfers that you brought in, it's saying you're still coming in and having to earn it if they go that route. Now, one thing Mel Tucker did say today is that, you know, they're still in discussions, but then he also answered you, Graham, and said when you asked him if the players knew, and he's like, maybe. So, you know, There's no secrets. If I'm hearing it, if you're hearing it, I'm guaranteeing there's a few little birdies in the Windy City on the North Shore who've probably heard it as well.
Yeah, no, and I, you know, I've always been not one of the few, I think there it was pretty split, who've leaned the tea leaves towards Thorne, but that was just my tea leaves guess, and you know, that was based on what we saw at practice and who was in the first teams. And I do think it does, as Chris alluded to, speak well to the idea that, you know, there's no ego. This is the guy they brought in, and this is a D'Antonio holdover, and yet this is the guy. And I've said this before about quarterbacks, especially, and I think this is, it's pretty much every position, but quarterback, there's no hiding. The coaches don't get to pick the quarterback ultimately. And they do in the fall camp, but the best player picks themselves. And especially that plays out over a season, usually, too. If two guys battle in September, that decision becomes fairly obvious. The last time I saw a coach try to pick the quarterback and fail miserably was D'Antonio 2013 and September, and that didn't work out.
I don't know. 2016 was pretty rough as well.
That's true. Goodness, I blanked out that.
But anyway, yeah, I know. Tried to.
My gut had been Thorne. You know, my sense is it's Thorne.
Yeah, and it was mine too. It was mine up until last week when you started hearing how close it was still, and then nothing.
And I do get that. So the logic is on two fronts. The logic that Chris brought up, I think this is important. Like the idea that, because this is what they tried to do with Maxwell years ago, right? You have the veteran start, and ideally have the year, and then younger guys compete the next year. And if you were to start And the other thing is, if you're going to have to pull a guy, say things go wrong, better to pull the veteran is going to be done. You know, you have to pull and make a change, or at any point you make a change with the younger guy, that may be it for a guy like Thorne. He may decide I'm not gonna stay here. There are other guys, they don't. So I saw that logic. I also think that there's some things I've seen from Thorne that make me believe he might just be the better quarterback. And I'm not talking about
that first half of the Penn State game alone.
Yeah, right. No, I mean that was a brilliant like quarter and a half of football.
But that's all that it was, though, right? I mean, that's the trouble with that.
I really wish, and it would have been interesting to see what if they had that Maryland game doesn't get canceled, and he has to follow that up the next week, and they play that game. If that continues, right, and if they're able to build on that, and how that would have changed perception, and because you're right, it was just this brief flash of a moment, and so yeah.
Well, there was a few things that like if you follow me on Twitter, you probably know that.
I don't
you avoid following me. That's the whole thing. I mean, you know, I don't put much stock into hype videos because it doesn't really show you a lot. But there are always hidden gems and hidden nuggets in there. One, there were quite a few interceptions that we've seen in 11-on-11 or 7-on-7s in those that they've shown the defensive players. So we didn't know who was throwing a ball, but you could tell if it was a one or a two receiver in there. So you ask yourself, well, who's the quarterback that's throwing interceptions? And the other sign that kind of goes back to something I said last week, and then I've been saying quite a bit, quite extensively throughout camp. There was a play where Atavian Brown in a couple times we've seen it, the same play in the highlight video where he got against the number one offense, got a touch sack pretty much unfettered against Thorne or against Russo, who was kind of statuesque on the tag. And it made me wonder, is there something with the offensive line? Is there breakdowns there that require going with the more mobile quarterback? And that's something I've said all along. Sometimes it might even be if the battle's that close, it could be how much the guys in front of you make that a reality. Do you have a guy that has a clean pocket that can throw downfield, or do you have a guy that needs to be able to get out and create, particularly if the line's breaking down, as we've seen multiple times over the years with a lot of this group, because these are the same guys that are back from last year, the year before, other than Jared Horst.
Well, and to your point, like, you know, that's one more skill set that Thorne presents, an ability right. to do that. And so you have to be that much better as a quarterback, as a passer, to me, if you're Anthony Russo, because that's not really your strength. We go back to that Monday open practice, and again, we didn't see that much. You see a little bit, but there's a lot of oohing and aahing about the two deep passes he threw, and they were good passes. But the best pass of the day, still to me, was the Thorne. Jaden Reed pass over the head of the defensive back 25 yards on a dime downfield. The harder pass, the more difficult pass to execute. A lot of quarterbacks can throw a deep ball. Now, those are nice passes on the money. And I'm not saying – I think the best news for MSU right now, there have been years, and Chris and I have covered them, where they have not necessarily had a capable quarterback going into the first game, or you wondered if they had one. We have seen – capable play in a game impressively from Thorne. And Russo is a seasoned guy who, yeah, he's not a perfect quarterback, has a tendency to turn it over. He's a gunslinger. But I think these are two guys that you can capably win with. And I think that's the good news. The season doesn't even hinge on one of these guys staying healthy the whole time. That one of them goes down, you're going to have, you know, you've got another guy who can keep the thing going probably.
Well, how do you guys kind of want to look at the team right now? Do you want to go position by position, or, you know, kind of general thoughts on the offense and defense, or what? How are you guys feeling?
I don't know. We look at Northwestern. I mean, let's do that, right? Let's look at the game and what we think. I don't know. What do you think, Chris?
I mean, Northwestern, I think, you know that they've got a former transfer in quarterback. They've announced their quarterback 2 weeks ago in Hunter Johnson, which surprised some people with Ryan Helinski transferring in from South Carolina. So somewhat of a similar situation, although a guy who also had I think he transferred pre-portal. Had to sit out a year. So, but yeah, they lost their starting running back. to injury, and one of their offensive linemen. They lost a significant amount of their production on both sides of the ball. So it's not going to be the same team that won the West Division a year ago and lost to Michigan State in Spartan Stadium, which is crazy. You think about the teams that Northwestern played, and they beat Auburn in their bowl game. They had two losses last year. One was to Ohio State and one was to Michigan State, which is somewhat baffling in some ways. But in that game, Michigan State was able to run the ball against a very, very good defense. And, you know, Patty Fisher's finally gone, but their secondary's pretty good. So that also could play into it, because if you need more of a run-based option, which I think Rocky Lombardi in that game used his legs considerably to kind of dissect Northwestern's defense and lead them to that 29-20 victory, buoyed by a late touchdown as time expired. But, you know, if you need a guy that's going to be on the move to keep your run game going, that might be it as well.
No, I agree. You know, the thing about Northwestern is whether they win the division or they go 3-9, they're always the same team. Somehow they just win the division or they're 3-9. They're
very Wisconsin basketball.
Yes, they are. And they recruit to the same level. And that's what, you know, if you're Michigan State, you want to get to a point where you recruit in a higher level. But one of the things I like about this matchup is for MSU, and I normally, you know, I asked Mel Tucker about this today, about playing a conference game first. And, you know, he gives the usual he doesn't care answer. I think it's unnatural in a season. I think, and frankly, I think if you played the game, if the game was at home, I think it would be worse, because there's something special about a home opener. And so that home opener can be anybody, especially about the opener period. The opener can be Youngstown State. You're going to be so fired up. The crowd's going to be fired up.
It's going to be Youngstown State.
What I mean, though, is if you were to open up with Northwestern at home and then play Youngstown State at home, it's a different vibe. So it helps that it's on the road, that the home opener is still preserved in a ways like that. But I do think it's a good measuring stick. I think Northwestern is an ideal measuring stick, because unlike some programs, they don't fluctuate a ton. And you'll have, based on the type of players they recruit and have in there, you'll have a really good idea of who you are and where you are as a team after this. Their secondary is good, I agree. They're not as explosive, I think, in the past. I'm surprised the line is – I mean, it speaks to people having no idea what MSU is either, because Michigan State, even the line has crept up, the Vegas line, I should say, toward a closer. It's still 3.5 for Northwestern, which given all Northwestern lost, that's a little surprising. But then you've got people in our own company writing that Michigan State might be one of the 5 or 10 worst programs in college football that don't have any clue.
What's crazy about that line is usually it's about 3 points for home field advantage, and Northwestern never has home field advantage at Ryan Field when Michigan State plays there. It's always a heavy Michigan State crowd.
Vegas does not know how to do Eastern Michigan basketball or Northwestern football, because it is these are places that just don't have the home field advantage, but they don't take into account that. There should be no line advantage in Northwestern for home field. It shouldn't exist. It should be just a neutral site line for sure.
I think this is a game where Michigan State's defense just has to feast. And if they can't feast on Hunter Johnson, I think the Spartans might be in some trouble this season. I mean, you look at Hunter's stats, you know, I think he was named the starter in 2019 and then lost his job to Aiden Smith. And I think he split some time there. He only completed 46% of his passes in 2019, throw a pass at all last season. So, and he wasn't really that good at Clemson. Obviously, you know, Clemson gets 5-star quarterbacks all over the place, but this was a 5-star quarterback coming out of high school, and he has just yet to find his mark on college.
At a certain point, you are what you are, and he is not impressed at any point yet. And there's a part of me that really thinks Northwestern could be in trouble with him. Maybe he's found it. But sometimes people will say all the right things, and that's what they're hoping happens. But at a certain point, you are what you are as a player. And you know, I don't know that he's the answer. I'm going to pick Michigan State to win this game. Not because I'm sure of what Michigan State is, but I'm more intrigued by some of their parts than I am Northwestern's right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that injury to Cam Porter is a big one. I mean, you can't pick up a free agent at this point in the year in college football yet. Maybe in a couple of years when you know they allow roster cutdowns in July and you have free agency, I kid about that, but not really. But that's a tough loss. I mean, I know you've got some guys back, and they've got some talent at receiver. I mean, there's no question. They brought in the Robinson kid from Kansas who had 1,000 yards the last 2 years, and they get back J.J. Johnson, who's a good talent as well. But you got to be able to deliver the ball, and it's going to be a test for Michigan State's secondary. I mean, you know, this is going to put into practicum everything that Mel Tucker and his staff, first of all, recruited to. Because they went heavy on defensive backs in the transfer portal more than anything, and also how good these guys are and how well they can mesh and how well they understand the concepts and coverages and the pass off responsibilities that they need to, and
their mental fortitude too. I mean, you think about Chris, the great D'Antonio defenses were defenses that they rarely gave up anything big, but when they did, they just moved on quickly. They just didn't care, and they the next play was the next play. And we've also seen defenses of things has fallen apart a little in recent years, where one 20-yard chunk became another 20-yard chunk, and things started to go haywire. And these are kids who have transferred. I'm not saying they transferred for the wrong reasons. I'm not saying you're transferred because you're bailing. But I'm saying everybody transfers for one reason or another. And whatever the program they were at, and some of them just needed a fresh – some of it has nothing to do with your mentality is not to stick in there and fight. But – again, for a few of them, who knows? And so I think there are lots of things we need to learn about this team and sort of the makeup of it.
Yeah, Chris, you kind of mentioned how important the secondary is going to be for Michigan State in this game. And you look at the names, and I think it's a pretty intriguing group for Michigan State. You know, Ronald Williams come from Alabama. You have him listed as a starter. And whether it's Gervin or Kimber on the other side at cornerback, and then but you look at the three safeties and nickelbacks, and Xavier Henderson, Angelo Gross, and Michael Dow. Again, I just think that's a pretty talented trio right there, and they can have a big day versus the Wildcats.
Yeah, and they're going to need to use those other guys. They're going to use Kimbrough and, you know, Gervin, and they're going to need to use Lowry, and I'm missing one of the guys, Crump, you know, whether it be on the defensive side or in special teams. I'm really curious to see
Chuck Brantley
as well. You know, he's got to give Chuck a chance. That was kind of the phrase the last few weeks. And, you know, we saw him in some of those drills working with the ones at Meet the Spartans, which I thought was interesting as a true freshman, but they're very high on him at cornerback. But, you know, to me, you know, in front of those guys is going to be interesting because, you know, it's hard to gauge. I've got Quaveris Crouch and Noah Harvey listed as the starting linebackers, but Harvey was working with the threes. And, you know, I mean, that's, is it going to be Ven Van Someren, the Michigan transfer? Is it going to be maybe they go with Cal Halliday, the body? That's what Mel Tucker called him. I mean, he's kind of come on and, you know, he was good enough a player last year that he played a lot on special teams for them as a true freshman. And I think a lot of these true freshmen that played last year kind of got lost in the mix with the way the season went and just, you know, how odd it was. You know, guys like Halliday and Jeff Petroski, the defensive end, I think kind of got shuffled around. And then you got guys, I mean, what's going to happen with Jacob Slade? Is it going to be, is his hand healthy enough? You got to bring in Mallory and Jalen Hunt, or is someone like a Simeon Barrow, who everybody has been buzzing about throughout camp, talented enough to jump up and make plays. I mean, but a lot of those positions are positions unlike quarterback where you're going to be rotating guys in based on situations and whatever fatigue factors might come from a 9 o'clock game in Chicago in the middle of Labor Day weekend. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see how many snaps these guys get.
Chris, I don't know about you, but I was intrigued by this MSU team is any I've ever covered in terms of just sort of thinking they'll be interesting, thinking they could be decent, thinking I could have this all wrong and it could be trouble. Like, I don't, you know, there have been years where I've been very wrong, but should not have been. And this is one of those years where if I'm wrong, it was just a really hard year to predict.
Well, and that's why I asked Pat Fitzgerald on Monday, you know, because the numbers are stark. I mean, when you look at it, it's 21 transfers, it's 20 freshmen, it's 19 other guys that were on the roster last year and didn't play a snap. That's like, I think 53% of the 117-man roster has yet to play a snap for this team and this program and his coach. That's insane. I mean, you don't see that in college football. You've never seen that. The portal does that. The pandemic does that. The extra, the immediate eligibility does that. And that's why I asked Fitzgerald, I said, is this the future? I mean, how much do you think coaches around the country are watching this, particularly first-year coaches that want to put their blueprint on it? And he, I think he said, essentially paraphrasing him, that coaches are the great plagiarists. And if it works, they're, you better believe that there are going to be people that buy into it and follow it. But if it doesn't, they're gonna shy away from it.
And you have to identify guys too. I mean, what's interesting about this is I think you're right that a lot of people will try to duplicate it. But the duplication, if it's successful, is largely in identifying the right transfers and getting guys like, you know, Ronald Williams looks like a great get from what we're hearing, and obviously it's got to perform on thing. But if you get a guy who is in the mix to be a starter at Alabama corner and comes in and shows maturity and is able to play right away at that position, you know, that's a really good find. And the question will be with some of these other, you know, I mean, they're not going to hit on every transfer, but if 50% of these guys wind up being guys who are playing big minutes and really helping you, you've done it well.
Yeah, when we were going through the front six there, Chris, I was kind of like, boy, maybe it seems like Northwestern might try to run against this 4-2-5. I don't know how much tape you've crunched from last year, if at all. So I don't want to put that on you and say you've actually done it. But, I mean, a lot of it
depends on how good they are behind Porter. I mean, without Porter, a guy that was coming back that, you know, that had the bulk of that last year, it's hard to say. You know, I'm sure they're comfortable with it, but you know, this, you got to run against a front four that's maybe among the top three in the Big Ten, I think. You know, and just in guys coming back, I think Jacob Panishuk coming off of COVID looks a lot healthier. I think that, you know, Beasley really showed out last year and is back as a sixth-year guy. You've got Drew Jordan, who's a fifth year. I mean, they're older veteran guys that are there on that defensive line, and you know, Hunt and Mallory haven't maybe got the snaps in the past because of the guys in front of them, but they are very, very talented. That is, those guys in the middle are very talented, and you add in Slade, and you know, I think they're deep up front. It's gonna be tough to run against them unless you feel like you can get into that second level and the linebackers are giving chase and maybe can't get there.
And it'll be interesting to see how they handle what, you know, I go back to the Ohio State game in 2019 where Michigan State had one weak spot and at corner. And, you know, that the whole defense broke down because of it. You know, is this defense sound enough and do these guys trust each other enough where there's not this sense of doing too much? I think that's where the veterans on the defensive line are important. I agree. I think the talent in the interior line may be better. More higher ceiling, and the depth there is really good, but they're a little younger. And you know, and then at the linebacker level, the one good thing is I think they're, you know, they went from being dangerously thin at linebacker and corner to having enough guys that if you're them, you got to hope that somewhere in there are the right guys, you know, like but this is, again, you may not figure it out on week one entirely. And so there may be some missteps that happen. You know, we talk about the strengths of different sides. You know, I do think Northwestern's secondary is good. So does this look like, I mean, this could be a lower scoring game than some of the clashes between these two teams. If you know, Michigan State's defense is able to hold up against the run and Northwestern doesn't give a ton in the passing game in certain ways. And, you know, I'm fascinated by it. I think it'll be a great measuring stick for Michigan State in a lot of ways, and a measuring stick we would not get if they were playing Youngstown State first. And that's why this particular year, I'm kind of glad they're playing the way they are.
Yeah. And with that point, I think that's a good point. And I think that it also helps them to play Youngstown State second because it gives you a chance. Everybody's all, I mean, it's coach speak, but it's not coach speak without merit that you make your biggest improvement between week one and week two when you understand and know what you have. And that gives them a chance in week two to iron it out with the guys up top and then give guys more snaps and more reps behind them if all goes as planned.
Yeah, I think I might be with you, Graham, on the low scoring affair thing. Like, when it, you know, we all, Michigan State fans and, you know, maybe in reporters to an extent too, we all come into a season pretty optimistic every year. But then you just remember last year, boy, Michigan State really struggled to score points offensively. The offense looked bad times. Remember the very few rushing touchdowns last year, one rushing touchdown a year ago. Am I remembering that correctly?
Two rushing touchdowns, none by a running
back.
Yes,
that's what it was. So, and if they can't, if they do that again this year, I mean, there's no guarantee that, it feels like it can't be worse, but I guess we shouldn't bank on like four rushing touchdowns off on the first game.
I mean, they did not have a quarterback who could complete third and four last year. And so that makes it hard to sustain drives. I do not think that'll be the issue this year, because I think if that were the issue, they'd freaking have Noah Kim out there and they'd fix it. You know, like, I mean, I think they're in a little better spot at that position. And I do think that the offensive line, if their two tackles stay healthy, you know, this is, I mean,
they have to,
because the ultimate problem in this is they just haven't developed depth at that position. They can talk about nine guys who have made starts and they've had lots of guys who have been in tough spots and had to shuffle around, but in the interior, they might be okay if there's a little bit of injuries, because they do have some depth and guys who started. On the outside, though, they have not had enough tackles in the program for a long time. It's been my biggest issue with the idea that late in the D'Antonio era that injuries were crippling them, and they were. But also, if you don't recruit enough quality tackles, that doesn't get to be just the part of the problem is recruiting, right? It's not just. And I do think right now they are in a few spots. I mean, this is a team that I think could be a lot better in week one than they are in November, because I think there are a few places where the drop-off could be severe. I think at tackle, the drop-off could be severe. I think at receiver, they have two guys who might be special players. And then other guys who are talented, young guys who are good, and maybe in time you'll see some of those guys emerge where one of them could fill in and be okay as a number two or whatever. But we even saw with Ohio State, when they lost one of their blazing receivers last year against Northwestern, it looked like a struggle. Like you lose a guy, all of a sudden the offense looks a whole lot different. I think at running back, there's a depth to be okay. We don't know on defense yet, though, especially in the secondary and linebacker. I think they've got good safeties. If they were to have an injury there, though, I think you may feel it, you know, and so – that's the thing about this team is if they have a really blessed year health wise, you know, they might be okay. If they don't, I think it's not one of those teams that's necessarily built to overcome it.
I will say that, you know, when we talk about the tackle spot, when your third best tackle is your starting right guard, that's where things start to get a little wonky. Not because I think that there's a little talent drop off which you move Kevin Jarvis outside, but more importantly, it's the talent drop off and the cohesion drop off by moving one player over, one player in. You start making multiple rotations like that rather than having a plug and play guy who can the next tackle up. That disrupts things too, and you saw that in 2019, 2018, really all 2017, 2016, all the years that. Prior that they had all the injury problems on the offensive line.
Yeah. All right. I want you guys to make a couple of predictions off the cuff here. First, how many rushing touchdowns will the Spartans have this year, Chris?
I'm going to say 12, which is probably a high number, but I think Kenneth Walker himself had 13 a year ago at Wake Forest.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good number. I'll go over. I think last year was a real anomaly in a lot of ways. And I also think if Thorne is the starter, you'll see some stuff with him on bootlegs at the goal line and other things like that, maybe. So I'll go over, Chris, even on this, and go 13.
I don't think it was the anomaly. I think it's part of a continuing trend. I think it's a trend that they've addressed.
Yeah, and it was even among their woes, it was pretty severe last year.
Yeah.
I was going to also have you guys predict who the first rushing touchdown by a running back would be. Are you guys both going Walker, or are you going to go off the board here?
I'll go Jordan Simmons. I think there's a chance of Simmons, foot-in-the-ground guy who's going to – you know, what's interesting about Simmons is – and, Chris, I'd be interested to see what you think about this. there have been a lot of talk. I mean, I think the top three running backs are pretty clear, right? It's Kenneth Walker and Simmons and Elijah Collins in the mix is the guys that are going to get the most carries and probably have a plan to use out of the backfield. Every time I think Walker is number one. But Simmons, no matter who's been number one, has been like number two. I mean, and he even had that moment where he was number one. Like, I think Simmons is going to play a lot. I think they really like him. And we saw a burst of that a year ago. And I think, regardless of what's happening with the other guys, I think Simmons is going to be in the mix.
I guess I need a caveat here. Does it count when Connor Hayward lines up in the H-back in the slot, takes the jet sweep to the short side and scores? Does that count as a running back scoring a touchdown?
A listed running back on the roster.
If Connor Hayward does a short side jet sweep and scores a touchdown, do fans cheer or boo?
I think it's stunned silence like last year with nobody in the stands because people wouldn't believe that the play worked, two wouldn't believe that it was Connor Hayward, and three don't remember what a rushing touchdown's like. Unless Tyler Hunt. Tyler Hunt, all bets off. Yeah, I still think there's a chance Tyler Hunt starts at quarterback just as a great troll job and hands it off to Connor Hayward on the first play for a short side jet sweep 75-yard touchdown. Or I'll say Kenneth Walker, really.
So I know both of you have written separate columns on your game-by-game picks, but just to get it out there on the podcast, where do you think the Spartans will finish this year, Chris?
I got them 6-6. I think that they're going to be wildly unpredictable until we actually see them against another opponent. I think 6-6 is the baseline for the program. I think there's at minimum 6-win talent, at maximum probably like maybe as many as 9. I don't know if they could get to 10 with the schedule they've got in the non-conference with Miami in particular on the road. I don't like the matchup against Rutgers. I think Shiano's done some really good things, and I think they've got a lot of talent back. I do like the matchup against Northwestern, though, because of a lot of things that we talked about. I think they start 4-1. I think that they – and because mercifully for them, they get Nebraska as their second Big Ten game. And that's going to be interesting. But I think that back half of the schedule is really, really going to be challenging. Can they beat Michigan? You know, that's one of the coin flip games that I got as well. I think the Rutgers game is a coin flip the same direction. And they lose that. And I think there's like the Penn State game. I think they lose that. But I think that's a coin flip as well. So I think there's, you know, there until I actually see them, that's all in pencil at this point.
Yeah, and what's weird is, of course, I made my prediction that they would lose to Nebraska before Nebraska played Illinois, which always
ends that was up a fun game to watch.
It will, you know,
like bad football.
It will be in the sense that I think Nebraska season is going to go one of two ways right now. It's going to Bobby Williams it, right, where things just really wheels fall off. Or, and we'll find out a lot about them, they're going to be a team that's, you know, kind of fights to, you know, everybody against us. Fight that, keep things alive and have some pride. And if that happens and you've got a desperate team that's still together, now they're going to have played Oklahoma the previous week. So who knows where their mindset will be. But I don't think MSU is going to be. I think MSU is the best thing Chris said there, too, is the wildly unpredictable. Like, I think MSU is vulnerable against a lot of people. And I think true is as the season goes along and their depth concerns may take hold, that could become more pronounced. I think they're also capable of the reason I picked them to beat Indiana is not because I think they're better than Indiana. It's just I think they're built right now, if healthy, to be the type of team that can pull an upset here or there. And if there has to be a program that's good that I don't yet trust because they've never done it 2 years in a row, and I want to see Michael Penix actually be healthy for more than a few games, it's Indiana. So that was a game that seems like a game you could go there, and that's an upset that's realistic to expect. I have them 7-5. And I love the over 4.5 from Vegas. I think anybody who thinks they're one of the worst teams in college football hasn't covered the MAC. And that's just an asinine, lazy piece to write. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, there's way too much talent there for them to be one of the, I mean, first of all, one of the worst teams in football. When you go 3-9, Michigan State went 3-9 and they weren't one of the worst teams in football. One of the bottom five. I mean, that's just, they're always worst teams. That team lost 17-16 to an undefeated Ohio State team was pushing people around at the end of the year, and they were 3-9. Like, it's not going to happen that way.
Last year's team by the numbers was, though,
that's,
if you look at them. Of course, those numbers are skewed anyways because you don't have the non-conference. You don't have the MAC games on there. You don't have the Youngstown States. So, I mean, when you play all conference games, I mean, that's going to tell you really what you are. And when you look at those numbers on the offensive side in particular in the hundreds, some of them in the 120s when there's 128, 129 FBS teams, I mean, there was a lot of ground to make up. And the defense wasn't as good as you thought either outside of the games day one. I mean, you know, they got gashed by Iowa, Indiana, Ohio State, Penn State, and Rutgers put up numbers on them. So, I mean, there was a lot of work that they had to do. Now we're going to see how much that work can bridge that gap.
And I'm also curious about Miami because Miami's got Alabama to open things up. And then they got App State. And then it's a noon start. And look, Michigan State, Miami's an interesting trip. They're going to go down there, and I don't think it's going to be a lazy start for, you know, kind of the lazy or the sleepy start is the word I'm looking for. Sleepy start and noon kick, which it will be for the crowd. But for Miami, I'm curious how they do on a noon start coming off Alabama. It could be a competitive game against App State. They're usually overrated. People always think Miami's back. They're never back. And so like, they're coming off. They got a quarterback.
I mean, as long as Miami's not playing that Bishop Sycamore schedule and playing Alabama on Friday and then playing Michigan State, I think it'll be okay.
And De'Aaron King's coming off a torn ACL, and he'll have placed Alabama already. Like, is he going to be? Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm curious to see that too.
Yeah, if you remember when Alabama played Michigan to start the season, you know, it's been 5-6 years ago now. I mean, they just broke Michigan's spirit. And that set the tone for that season. If they do the same thing to Miami in this first game, maybe that sets Miami down a dark path.
Your point. Like, I think one of the things that happened 2 years ago to Michigan State in that Ohio State game was their spirit was broken. That game was earlier in the year than it usually is. So if you have this crescendo and you don't play Ohio State till the 9th, 10th game of the year, even if you're nowhere near as good as them, you don't know it until then. When the team that you sort of set your goals against and things fall apart and they dismantle you and your spirit is broken. That's why Wisconsin happened right after that, where they lost 38-0 or whatever. I mean, and so it is true. If Miami gets just, and I don't know what's going to happen, but if they get throttled by Alabama and all of a sudden all the luster of this great season they were supposed to have is gone, where are they? How are they built upstairs? We'll find that out.
All right. Well, you guys have already kind of tipped your hand on this, but let's just make it official here since we always end with predictions. Graham? Northwestern Michigan State. Who you got Friday night?
I'm gonna go Michigan State. And I already predicted this, so I should look up the score I put. But I'll say it's gonna be like 30. I do think there's some points, like 31-27, Michigan State.
Did you just say like 20 minutes ago that you thought this might be a low scoring game?
No, let me look at my actual skid.
You're duping people.
Yeah, I wouldn't take the over or the under. How's that? I think the value in this as a bet is Michigan State on the money line or getting the points. You can buy the points up to 4. You can tease it up to 10.5, or you can take them on the money line, which is like +125. I think there's value in that. I think taking over unders in week one is absolutely, absolutely insane.
I've got Michigan State winning 20-13 because I think these two teams both have a lot of bigger concerns with revamping and rehabbing their offense than they do on the defensive side. Again, like I said, I mean, there's a good secondary there for Northwestern that's back. There's a great defensive line for Michigan State that's back. You know, if you're looking at the strengths versus weaknesses with some of those, you know, you got the quarterbacks. One, we don't know who's going to be Michigan State's quarterback, but you got a quarterback who's struggled to throw going against an inexperienced secondary. So, you know, it gives the defense a little bit of confidence too. So, yeah, I think 20-13 Michigan State wins. The home crowd helps. I mean, Michigan State's home crowd in Evanston is going to help.
And I go 27-23. That was this. I can't go against the prediction I already published and nothing else has changed.
So you do it on the radio all the time. Don't even give it that.
All right.
27-23. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to make this podcast full homer because I think Michigan State's going to win as well. But I'm going to say something in the 20-7 is going to be my final prediction. I just think Northwestern's offense is not going to be able to score. I don't think Hunter Johnson is a very good quarterback. He hasn't taken a snap in 2 years and wasn't good 2 years ago when he's playing for Northwestern. And if he has a breakout game versus Michigan State, I mean, I think that's going to say something about Michigan State's defense and nothing great, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I'm going 20-7 Michigan State. All right. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Graham_Couch, at Chris Solari, at Phil_Friend, and at LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.